The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week where we have a guest join us. We got 2 guests joining us. Errol Spence will join us later in the show. But first, check him out at Channel 6. Check him out on Debatable, the best college football writer in America. Spencer Hall, what's going on?
Thank you, sir. I'm good. I'm good. We're actually under 60 days until college football, which that number didn't used to feel me because I didn't used to understand time. But I'm less time blind than I used to be. That happens when you get older. And I'm kind of terrified because I got to start learning people's names, Bo. We all got to learn. Like, we're all like kindergarten teachers, you know, like it was nice seeing you, Timmy. I'm immediately deleting your name and I got to learn the rest of them.
You got to learn their names and you also have to learn where they work now.
Which is a new wrinkle that we have. Not an entirely new wrinkle, but I think in this degree, it's a new wrinkle. For instance, do you know who Kentucky's starting quarterback is? He's new. He's a transfer. Do you know who Georgia's starting quarterback is? Because it's not Stequavius Bennett anymore.
I'd say I know what his name's. No matter who Georgia's starting quarterback is, I feel like I know what his name starts with. Is it the Brock Vandergriff guy?
Probably. It's Carson Beck, I believe.
Also, same category.
Yeah, which makes sense because we can take the names and reverse them, right? Carson Beck, Beck Carson, you can be a starter at Georgia because your name makes sense in either direction. Transfer quarterbacks, I think every quarterback should transfer at one point. Like, I think it's just an exchange system, right? At this point, like, you should do it because it's going to be good for your career, most likely. You'll see some new stuff. But, like, Kentucky has Devin Leary. Devin Leary was great in NC State. He really was 2 years ago, had an amazing season. And now he's at Kentucky. It just doesn't, there are just some places where having a good season doesn't really guarantee that you're going to be there anymore. Like player mobility upwards is now a very, very real thing. And it's going to be amazing to watch because for as many of these dudes that don't work out, we're going to watch some guys who have been in the wrong place absolutely blossom at different places. I sound a little excited and I should be because this is cool to me.
Yeah, like I get the transfer bug for the guys who aren't playing. The ones who are, that's where it just almost feels kind of weird to me because I'm like, look, I understand the game you boys are playing, but the long run play is to be a 3-year starter at that place, at which point you can always get a job selling cars, right? Like for those of you who are not going to go to the NFL, you should stick around somewhere for a long time. Trust me, the long run money is in that right there.
Or is it? Like, I think that can be true if you say I'm a 3-year starter at some place. If you're a Stetson Bennett, for instance, right? But also Stetson Bennett is the exception to the rule in a lot of ways because you get a lot of guys who come in and do one and done, and they're pretty successful. I don't think the majority of the guys, but they're spectacular, and they're really hard to overlook. And how am I going to look at a jock, a 22-year-old jock, who admittedly has something I'll never understand, and I think likely you'll never understand, most of our listeners will never understand, which is this. You've been good at everything. You've been good at everything, right? And somebody says you could be the next Joe Burrow. Am I going to believe as a competitor that I'm not the next Joe Burrow? No, I'm going to believe it, right? Because I've been good at everything. I know how this works. I base this, by the way, not just on jock mentality, but you tell a 22-year-old most anything and they'll believe they could do it.
Fair.
And they might be right. They really might, right? Youth is an amazing drug. But they really, if you say, hey, I'm going to be that one guy who comes in, has a 5,000-yard receiving season, gets a Heisman, and goes on and gets drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. That's what they have to believe. So, yeah, business-wise, you are correct. Let's go ahead. Let's plan the car dealership model, right? Let's go ahead and become a local hero. Because thanks to NIL being a local hero, it's a little more profitable than it used to be.
Yeah, it really is. Like, I don't think we've done nearly enough of going and getting some of these local ads and getting a hold of just what NIL is doing for some of these dudes.
Oh, it is. You could go look. Now, I don't think these are entirely accurate, okay? But to give you a ballpark of what we're looking at, you can go to on3.com and they have NIL valuations. Now, again, these are ballpark at best. But if they're only 50% right, you're looking at a fairly nice little lucrative living that, you know, 18, 19-year-old would be making TikToks about. I go on TikTok and people are like, listen, man, I'm a welder and I make $300,000 a year. Okay, there's going to be people on there who are like, that's cool. I'm a quarterback at NC State and I'm making $150,000 a year off some like barbecue endorsements. That's incredible. To return to an old point, which I think still stands up, $150,000 to my 19-year-old brain is retirement money. I'm looking at islands.
Look, I tell people all the time, I did an internship after my first year of graduate school. I was 21 years old. I got a paycheck for 1 week of work. This is the summer of 2002. I got a paycheck for 1 week of work, and it was for $1,000. And I looked at my father, and I said, and I quote, I now understand how people sell out. All it took my 21-year-old brain was $1,000 for me to think about all the morals that in that moment I might have been willing to compromise. $1,000. That's all it took.
Bo, I saved up $28,000 at the age of 21 to go travel. And I remember thinking like, yeah, man, I'm not going to have to work for a year. A year. That was what my brain thought. And honestly, came close. But not quite there. $24,000 was the definition of security for me at the age of 21. So, like, what's 180, 200K for a skill player who ends up getting transfer money? And you're living what? You're living in Lexington, Kentucky? You think that's going to go ahead and drain the bank quite like staying in, I don't know, Midtown Manhattan? No. No, you're good. You're good. So, point being, this is something where you're going to see a lot of economic incentives fueling, I think, something that I think is easier to appreciate, which is you're going to see some people in some different places doing some really cool stuff. You're going to see players coming out of, like, this is my favorite dynamic, by the way. You say, man, the Pac-12's dead. Okay, Pac-12's not dead. It's just weirder than it's ever been. Yes. And you're going to see a lot of quarterbacks go out to the Pac-12 and suddenly be reborn because they're not getting hit in the face by a 315-pound swamp monster of a defensive lineman every other play. They're going to go out there and put up 4,000 yards. That's what Michael Penix Jr. did. That's what Bo Nix did. This is what you do. Head, go west, young man. Go west because it's easier. You're going to be able to pad your stats. You're going to like get less mileage on the body, and you're going to look good come draft time, right? Go ahead, get in that combine. Nobody hits you in the combine workouts, man. You're going to look great.
Yeah, I say that's what I think every time when somebody's like, yo, these kids all want to go play in the SEC, and you look at like the cluster of top 30 recruiting classes that are all in the SEC, and I'm like, fellas, you guys are doing this all wrong. They'll get you to the NFL from anywhere. Anywhere, I tell you, anywhere. Go get them highway miles in them other conferences instead of them city miles that you racking up in the SEC, where those guys go to the NFL with awful medicals. Awful medicals.
Mm-hmm. You get what? Not only awful medicals, but when you say, well, I could transfer and go somewhere else, or I could stay and start in the SEC. Let me just go over all the starters from 2022. And you tell me where they came from. Stetson Bennett. That's a guy who, yeah, he started at UGA, but ended up transferring from junior college. Bryce Young, that's native, but that's Alabama, and they're different. Hendon Hooker, transfer. Spencer Rattler, transfer. Jackson Dart, transfer. Jaden Daniels, transfer. You end up with Will Levis, transfer. Nobody is immune from this because there is so much talent out there, and so much of it is odd cut. This is college. You're not talking about prototypical talent unless we're talking about guys who are, you know, can't miss projects or guys who have demonstrated, like even Bryce Young. We talk about Bryce Young, 3-year starter, okay? Ideal NFL talent. That's not what it said on this card I have where they have him at 5'4" and are talking about how short this man is, right? Nobody is prototypical talent, so everybody ends up in atypical places. And that includes the SEC. So, I mean, to go back to the original point, the 3-year car dealership model is what you and I as dad generation people now would say, son, I need you to invest. I need you to think about the dealership. Think about getting that dealership. But that's not the way they're going to think. And I think in some cases, they're right, because you can end up in a really, really good spot for you that definitely wasn't where you started.
Yeah, and we just can't forget how many people just got money to blow. Like, every time I see one of these stories about some crazy sports collectible that's gone in an auction for like $2 million, we didn't get these stories all the time. Like, I remember what a big deal it was when Wayne Gretzky and the then owner of the Los Angeles Kings and somebody else went in on that Hannes Wagner card. You know, they did the T-451, 251, whatever it's called. And they did that back in the day. And I forget what the price was, but that took three rich people to all get together. Every other week, I hear about somebody buying the rag that Babe Ruth used to keep on the nightstand at the brothel, right? For $5 million or something crazy like that. And it's just because, oh, yeah, there are a lot of people with just money to blow, and they are blowing it on football players. They are here for it. Except for your school, where they say they're going to blow it on a football player and then pull it back.
Oh, listen, you check out that 2024 class. Don't do, like, yes, I'll admit, mistakes made. Go check out the 2024 class. The money's right. We're slowly getting our credit right, okay?
Have I told you why that 2024 class makes me feel so old, by the way?
Boy, there are a lot of different reasons, but go ahead. Tell me yours.
Last time I checked, at least, Florida had a quarterback committed by the name of DJ Lagway from Willis, Texas.
That is correct.
That would be Derek Lagway Jr., whom I saw play, I believe, all four of his years in high school. As a freshman and sophomore, he was the running back behind a gentleman by the name of Michael Bishop. Yes. But it's one thing when I see the people like Blank Jr. and their dad was famous. It's another thing when it's Blank Jr. Mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, I saw you play in high school.
I know your dad.
Yeah, like they used to call your dad Shaq because it just didn't make no sense that he was that big at 14 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is, there are a number of ways where you could feel very, very, very old. It's when you start knowing guys who are just dudes, not stars, just dudes, and you see their kids looking big as hell and out here pulling down actual NIL money. You know, that's it, that to me is, when you talk about money in this sport, trust your eyes. Go to a game. If you go to a game and you say, okay, well, where's all this money coming from? Okay, money's hard to understand unless you see it. And then you look and go, okay, well, who's paying for all this? Well, go look at the apartment center next to the stadiums at SEC stadiums, because there's this whole trend of like boutique condos that people will buy just for game day, and they rent them out the rest of the time, or they rent them out to other people for games, whatever. Those go for tremendous amounts of money. And they just sit there most of the time. They're not a full-time investment. And people snap them up like popcorn. Just eating property. That's their side gig. That's not where they live, Bo. That's just their little side house. These are the people behind college sports. They'll spend money. They do not care. They will take the SEC's probably seventh or eighth best quarterback and ensure that his market value is somewhere around the $300,000 to $400,000 range. That's where we start. Now, those numbers are going to move because this is a new market. But I had somebody on the radio the other day ask me, well, how much do we pay for a player, right? Like, if you transfer it, how much would you pay? And I'm like, well, it's a new market. So you tell me. Whoever says the number first, that's the number. But the money's real, and that's not going anywhere. It might go up, might go down. In Miami's case, that money might evaporate overnight because it turns out John Ruiz, their big booster, he's having some financial difficulties, which might be reflected in their recruiting rankings.
You don't say. You're telling me that somebody from Miami, their money wasn't really the money that we thought it was?
You know, markets are difficult, Bo, and they're capricious. And what they are one year might not be what they are another year. I'm sure they'll get that right. Don't come to me saying this is slander. I'm just saying market conditions change.
Like I say, I'm ready for somebody to put together the research about the Texas A&M recruiting rankings plotted against the price of crude.
Oh, go ahead. I would love to see it because I'm betting that's a one for one, baby.
Yes.
Go ahead and take the price of oil and Texas A&M recruiting rankings, and I bet that little graph, you just lay it over. It's just the same thing.
Yeah, let me tell you this too. If this really does just become a money game and the University of Texas has arrived in the Southeastern Conference, everybody needs to buckle up. I'm sure they'll find a way to mess it up. They have a way of doing such things. But buckle up, because ain't nobody got more money coming from more places than them jokers. Now, will they ever be able to agree on anything about who to give the money to? Entirely different discussion.
Well, that's why they're the college football Mets, baby. That payroll, fat. Results, thin. Lean.
Might change, though. It does feel like things are going a little better for them. Just a little. I'm just saying, if you had the point where they can be sorry and Bijan can get an endorsement deal from Lamborghini, I just feel like that's what you need to tell everybody. Like, yo, you can get a Lamborghini here if you play it right.
Hello, 19-year-old man. I can put you in a Lamborghini in Austin, Texas for the next 2 to 3 years and ensure that you make as much money as a partner at a law firm. How you feel about that?
Yeah. Like, yeah, after this year, yeah, you go ahead and transfer to Kansas State. Just leave those Lamborghini keys here, okay? see where you about to go.
I want to see who's pushing the Lambo around the streets of Manhattan, Kansas. There's gotta be one. Just one recruit. They're like, just go get the one Lambo in Manhattan, Kansas, and please park it out in front of the football offices so they think we have one. Doesn't even matter if they let the player drive it. Just keep it out there so all the other recruits are like, ooh, for real? Is that how we do it?
One of my favorite things in the world is being in a small city, mid-sized city, town, whatever it is, but it's of the caliber that when you see a car like that, you can instantly start deducing whose it must be.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I saw a Lamborghini in Raleigh once. It was probably around 2008 or so. And I was like, oh, I have no doubt this is Mario Williams. There's nobody else tooling around here in no damn Lamborghini. Nobody else got that signing bonus. It's either him or Pep. These are the only two options that we got on whose car this is.
You can kind of do that in Atlanta, not because Atlanta is a small town, but because there were only so many people with the money and reckless swagger to purchase certain vehicles. Dennis Schroeder, I always knew when Dennis Schroeder was around because Dennis Schroeder was the only person who had a gold foil chrome, like not chrome, but like gold chrome, right? Like golded out Audi R8. That was the guy. He was the only one. So like that happens in Atlanta sometimes. I have a question for you, Bo. I know you're off the Texas poison. Okay. Mm-hmm. You just officially, that's the official stance, correct?
Yes.
But how in are you?
I have to be honest with you. When they were beating Oklahoma like 170-0 this year at the Cotton Bowl, my joy in watching Oklahoma lose was still there. But you know what happened every time they scored a touchdown? They play that damn song. Like, if I want to get in, if the chain of circumstances happens that makes getting in more attractive, they keep playing the damn song, and then it just completely ruins everything for me. Because, like, I managed to compartmentalize and be like, hey, I really enjoy Bijan, right? Like, I can really enjoy Xavier Worthy. I can find some individuals. I find this whole Quinn Ewers, Arch Manning thing to be really, really fascinating. Like, how embarrassed Archie Manning will be if his son can't beat out a boy with that haircut. You know, like, all of those things. Like, I get that. But I just can't. I don't think I could do it. But I want to ask you this right fast as I got on this. I can't remember if you and I have talked about this before. I think I may have talked about it with Joel. Do you ever think that Archie Manning looks at his slow-ass kids and is just embarrassed?
People do not realize Archie could go.
Yes, Archie, and his sons can't run.
Like, not a lick. Not a single one of them who ended up playing professional ball. I don't know about Cooper. Cooper might. Maybe he's the guy who has the jets, but he ended up retiring from football at an early age due to a neck thing. Archie played in what is one of the great lost masters tapes of college football. He played for Ole Miss in a game against Alabama. And what I want to say is 1967. I might have the year wrong. This is the one where Archie has the full Manziel. He throws for 330 yards. He rushes for over 100 yards. He's all over that field. He is a one-man wrecking crew. And there's like next to no footage of it, but he could go. I know nobody who has ever seen footage of Archie Manning playing for the Saints, believe me, but that's after he spent a good 5 to 6 years getting body slammed into the turf and getting his legs torn sideways by like 70s NFL rules. He could move, and he's got to be so disgusted that all of his children are just Easter Island statues, just Moai, immobile.
Yo, you got to know that Archie can move, because honestly, otherwise he'd be dead.
He had to be able to move at the NFL level even with his busted knees, because we wouldn't be talking about him. He wouldn't be able to speak if he were alive, and he's still, you know, pretty eloquent.
Well, have you seen the HBO doc they did on Joe Namath a few years ago?
No, I've not.
Yo, before the knees went bad, Joe Namath could move. Like, if Joe Namath could have moved like that in the NFL, that would have been the greatest quarterback who'd ever played, period.
He had the Frank Gore thing where I believe he had, like, multiple knee issues before he ever touched the pros, period. But, yeah, he could go. A lot of those dudes end up moving slow in the NFL because they either got tore up in college back in the 60s or their first 3 years in the NFL were nothing short of a horror show in terms of injuries. That's, you know, Kenny Stabler. Like, I don't know if anybody knows this, but like all those Alabama quarterbacks from the 60s, they called their own plays, which Bear let them do. He'd just say, here's three or four plays, go pick one, right? Which is funny because that's either how little Bear cared about offense, right? Like, I don't know, y'all go punt. Y'all go punt and the defense will bail you out. Or that's how much he, you know, chose to trust his, like, athletically gifted quarterbacks. But, like, Stabler, Namath, all of, you know, Manning, all of those dudes could actually at one point move. And not just relative to their segregated competition. These dudes, like, on a level could actually go. And I think that's one thing that maybe we take for granted. We're going to talk about, like, all of these new quarterbacks and how some of them are like Carson Beck. You're going to see Carson Beck for Georgia, okay? Or Brock Vandegrift, or whoever ends up starting for Georgia. You're going to see these guys, and you'll go, man, those guys are slow. No, you're just used to watching Stetson Bennett. All of these guys are giraffes. Like, just based on what you see, the level of competition in terms of speed, agility, and overall athleticism is so much higher than it once was. It's just the defensive end catching him can now run like a 3.8 and jump through the roof.
Well, let me tell you something that's interesting as you mentioned this about, you know, Bear and that run and the segregation. So I'm looking at, so they had the run from, in 64, they won a national championship. 65, they won a national championship. 66, they went 11-0, and they were number three. And in 67, they were number eight. And I think that's the last year that Ken Stabler was there. After that, oh boy. That segregation started to be a bit problematic. After they got through that run of Namath Stabler, after that, it was like, hey, boys, I think we're going to need to figure something else out. It's like with Dabo after no Deshaun Watson and no Trevor Lawrence. It's like, oh, this looks like what it is.
Yeah. There is a visible – there's two things that really sort of – I'm glad you mentioned that because there's two things that really alter the landscape in terms of – roster composition and overall speed and agility. Okay, in terms of roster composition, it is definitely integration. It's definitely when Alabama goes, you know what, it's funny because I live in a community where I can't actually take my best athletes. Isn't that weird? Because we face a team like USC that posters us, makes us look slow. We're not going to tolerate that for long. How racist and how competitive are we? These two things are not compatible. The other thing that changes it is this, is strength and conditioning becomes a thing. Nebraska happens. Nebraska has a miserable couple of years, and Bob Devaney says, I'm tired of it. Let's just go ahead and lift. And he told the guy who was the conditioning coach, Boyd Epley, said, if you get slower, we get a second slower, then I'm going to stop this. And then everyone got it faster and meaner. Right off of just like, if you look at the original diets, Bo, they're hilarious. They're like, well, eat an extra loaf of bread every day and drink some milk and then lift these paint cans, like literally. And they're doing that. And athletes, when they respond, they just blow up that. And then when they get real good at the supplements and they get real good at the weightlifting, that's when you see a change. Like, people don't know why Nebraska was so good for so long. It's so far ahead of. And when you leave here, you will look so much different than when you come in. You will be faster. You will be stronger. The dude across from you will be legit scared of what you do because all he's been doing is push-ups, right? Yes. Push-ups and clean living. I'm ready for football. Nah. After 1972, buddy, that ain't going to do it.
I'm now, by the way, reading on the wiki entry for the 1970 Alabama season, and that is where they opened the year with the infamous Sam Bam Cunningham game. And the thing that people have to remember about the infamous Sam Bam Cunningham game is that it was in it was in Birmingham. It was at Legion Field, but it was a home game, right? Like Sam Bam Cunningham came and did that to him in front of everybody. And, you know, it is, what's the word? Apocryphal. Apocryphally said apocryphal. Is the day that Alabama integrated. But there are people like, oh no, they already had a guy on the freshman team. Yeah, I hear you. But that's the day the locals realized is what it had to be. right? Whether or not the black dude was on the team or not, there might have been some people that was salty about it. Not after that. No, sir. No, sir. Mm-hmm. I wish that game would have actually happened in 1968 so it could have been O.J. Simpson, and we could have seen if O.J. Simpson would have simply been able to charm the entirety of the Alabama nation, the Alabama crowd, because apparently he had all the magic for the white folks. Like, if O.J. would have played in that game against Alabama instead of Sam Bell cut it half, he might have changed the entire world, man. Whole world might have been a whole different place, all thanks to O.J. Simpson. But instead, O.J. Simpson changed the world in an entirely different way. Now, didn't he?
By becoming a rental car spokesman. And that's definitely what we're talking about here.
But he really did change the world by being a rental car spokesman.
He did.
That is Spencer Hall. Coming up, though, we were going to talk to the great Errol Spence about his fight in Las Vegas, July 29th. Check it out. All right, July 29th, T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, the biggest boxing match in years. Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford. And joining us now on the right time is Errol Spence. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. Just cool and relaxed and getting ready for my big fight.
Yeah, it doesn't really feel like getting ready for a fight like this can involve so much cooling. Like, this seems like something that would be kind of consuming.
Nah, man. This is my whole... That's basically my whole mentality and aura, man. I just, you know, cool, relaxed, calm, even before the fight. Like, I'm just calm, relaxed, because my whole motto is, you know, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Whatever happens, it's going to happen regardless.
Yeah, and I remember the first time I was about 15 years ago now, the first time I was around a boxing camp, I was covering a dude who was getting ready to fight Klitschko, and I went to the camp. And that, I think, for me was like the first time that I got the full understanding of like how intense the training for boxing is. Like, so for you to try to give some indication to people about the physical demands of getting ready for a fight like this, how would you describe it?
You basically just stressing your body out, really, man. You just... you know, working hard, trying not to overwork yourself. And that's why you got to have a great, you know, corner and people around you too to stop you from just overworking and training too hard and, you know, and knowing when enough enough, because you're just trying to be prepared for everything that could happen in the fight. So you just running nonstop, I run like five, six miles a day, strength conditioning, being in the gym doing bag work for like 30 minutes, So it's a lot of work goes to it. And just watching what you eat, drinking number water, coconut water. So it's just everything that comes with it, sparring partners and working out and just being 100% just focused on the task at hand.
Now, you are originally from DeSoto, Texas, outside of Dallas, and you play high school football with Von Miller. But the thing that jumps out to me about that is you fight at about 140. I'm trying to think about you playing high school football in Dallas at that size. That's some big boys out there. There's not weight classes over there.
But, you know, I'm a big guy too. So I might fight at 147, but that ain't what I'm weighing when I'm not – when off season, that's not what I'm weighing at all.
Like, how far do you have to get down to get to fighting weight?
I walk around probably 176, 175. So, you know, and I got to get down there. So if I wasn't boxing, I'd probably be in the 180s.
No, I got you. Now, I want to talk to you about this fight with Terrence Crawford on July 29th. In 2022, you said that this was the fight that you want. It took another year to come together. You've said that for about 5 years, this has been the fight that you've wanted. What is it about this fight that you've wanted for that long?
I think this is an important fight in boxing. This is the best versus the best. He's the best 147-pounder. I'm the best 147-pounder. And we're fighting each other for all the marbles. So I thought this is historically, you know, historic fight right here. And everybody wants to see this fight. This is, you know, on everybody. This is probably the fight that everybody want to see. Well, this is the fight that everybody wants to see. You know, boxing fans, non-boxing fans, everybody wants this fight. Everybody talking about this fight. When I'm walking or when I'm at the store or anywhere, you know, just the fight that people want, because they ask me about when I'm going to fight Terrence Crawford or what's going on with me and Terrence Crawford. So I feel like this is in high demand. And so I want to give the fans what they want and give everybody what they want and satisfy everybody and satisfy myself too. So I'm just giving people what they want.
When you say satisfy yourself, what do you mean?
Basically what I want. This is definitely the fight that I wanted, just because this for all the marbles and this what everybody wants. It's like when Sugar Ray Leonard fought Tommy Hearns or Marvin Hagler. That's the fight that everybody was, you know, basically that's the fight that they wanted. So for me, I'm about giving the fans what they want. This the fight that they want. I feel like it's be huge. This is gonna have all the stars at the fight. This is gonna have everybody on the edge of their seat, you know, before the bell ring, just for this fight here. So I feel like I give everybody what they want and give myself the gratitude of fighting a great fighter like Terrence Crawford and getting the history books and beating one of the best fighters in the world.
Well, I think one of the frustrations for fans, and I imagine a frustration for you, is how long a fight like this can take to come together. So what took so long in this case to make this fight happen, given that you wanted it and Crawford certainly seemed to want it?
How long you think it took to happen?
Well, I think from what I've read, you mentioned this at first in 2022. I've heard people say things as far back as 5 years in trying to make this happen.
I mean, 5 years ago, we weren't going to get the money that we get now for the fight. So for people to say they wanted to have him 5 years ago, they're just selfish thinking on their behalf, just because he only had one belt 5 years ago. He didn't fight Sean Porter 5 years ago. He didn't fight, he wasn't fighting anybody 5 years ago. He was just a good fighter. And the exact same thing with me. 5 years ago, I didn't fight Sean Porter. I didn't fight Danny Garcia. I just had one belt. So for people to say that was just been two good fighters fighting each other. I feel like at this time, you got two great fighters fighting each other. They're fighting for the undisputed. And we're just fighting for all the marbles. And we're basically fighting to be the best fighter. But to fight, whoever wins this fight, that's the best fighter in boxing. 5 years ago, we would have fought. They wouldn't have said that's the best fighter in boxing. So I think for people to say they wanted it 5 years ago, they're just selfish thinking on their behalf.
No, I can understand that. Now, Sean Porter is a common opponent that both of you have. And it was interesting reading what he had to say about the difference between fighting you two. And this is a quote from him. He said, "Errol was prepared to beat me at my game, and Terrence was prepared to beat me at his game." Like, do you think that that's a fair comparison between the way the two of you fought him?
I think, for sure. Because I came in there with, trying to fight him, basically. And that Sean Porter game is the fight. And I basically came in there, you know, just trying to go at it with a guy that's known for just fighting. And Terrence Moore was, you know, trying to box and, you know, and then he'll get you in the later rounds instead of in the early rounds. So Terrence Crawford stuck to his game plan and his guns. And for me, I was just like, yeah, we're going to fight.
Well, one thing that's interesting, you and Crawford did an interview together, I think it was just a couple of days ago, where you were rating each other's skills, and you seem to have a very high respect for him. But every time they asked you to rate something of his from 1 to 10, you said that his fight resume was a 0.5. Crawford's average on all the things for you was a 7. Yours back for him was a 5.4. Like, how much of that is just kind of the fun of promoting the fight, and how much of that is just really how you see it?
Some of it how I see it, and some of it just fun from on the fight, you know. But some of it, just like the opponents. I mean, I don't rate his opponent high, but I rate his skill level and talent super high, but not his opponent level.
Now, with his skills that you rate high, like, what do you think is the biggest thing that you're gonna have to deal with from him?
Just his talent. His feet and just, you know, how he throw punches, but that's about it.
When you say his feet and how he throws punches, what do you mean by that?
Just, you know, he got quick feet sometimes, you know, when he wants to get on his toes and move. And he throws punches like kind of wide and looping shots too.
Yeah, I would feel like though, like the wide and looping shots seem to be the ones though that would give you a better chance to counter off of, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
Now, you are from Dallas. I'm from Houston, so, you know, we got the little Texas thing going here. How cool was it for you coming out for a fight and having Big Tuck lead you out to the ring?
That was dope because I grew up watching, listening to Big Tuck, DSR, you know, all that. So that was a dope experience for me because I feel like that's more of a Dallas anthem, Big Tuck, especially Big Tuck. Mostly Big Tuck songs is like a Dallas anthem. Like, if you from Dallas, you know Big Tuck, you know DSR. Like, they basically like the staple of Dallas, you know, even now. So it was dope because basically everybody was just singing the song and rapping and, you know, and everybody got live as soon as they heard the beat drop. So that was dope just doing it for the city. And most of my fights, you know, I try to get a Dallas artist to walk me in.
Now, for you, when you think about all the things, like, since you've been doing this, what's the coolest thing to happen to you as a result of being Errol Spence, like, championship boxer?
My checks keep getting bigger and bigger. That's the coolest thing for me, man. Checks keep getting bigger and bigger and just, you know, when I just certain times when I just go to my mama's house and give her a check, give her some money, give my dad some money, and just, you know, just seeing especially my mom, just seeing how happy she is when I give her money, especially the first time I ever gave her some money. So that's the most dope moment for me.
There's got to be some moments and experiences, though, right? Like, yo, I'm in this room, I'm in this place, because this is who I become.
Oh, that don't matter. Me getting my mama money is a dope experience for me. Everything else don't. That don't. Me being a dope place with a whole bunch of rich folks, that don't mean nothing to me. They there because what I done and what I accomplished, my mom going to be there regardless. So that's the dopest moment for me getting my mama money.
No, I can see that. Now, something else I saw that was interesting is that you made some statements last week about the sanctioning bodies in boxing and that the fighters pay these fees for title fights, but nobody really seems to know where the money goes. They asked the sanctioning bodies about it. They didn't really say too much about it. Why did you feel it was important for you to say something about that?
I mean, because we need structure in boxing. NFL has structure. Basketball has structure. Soccer, everybody got structure, but said boxing. Boxing is like the Wild Wild West. You know, it's lawless. If you got money, influence, especially you got influence, you can make anything happen. So I think we need to have a little bit more structure in boxing. Just know where stuff going. Why is this? Knowing just why for things. You know, why is this? Why is that? Instead of just doing it. Like, we need to give the boxers, we the one making the money. We need to give them some say-so, at least, you know, tell them what happened. But I feel like it's not going to happen until, you know, boxers can get to come together. But boxers sit up like that where boxers don't come together and they don't unite because we kind of split apart. Well, we are split apart. So everybody's not going to, top guys in the sport not going to come together.
But I think it's not even just the fact that they don't unite, but you also very rarely hear anybody of your stature even say something about it. Like, does that part surprise you or disappoint you?
Yeah, a little bit, but I mean, I can see why, but yeah, they don't. I mean, a lot of guys wait till they retire or wait till they out the game. You don't hear somebody talk about it when they're at the top. Like, I think Jamel just spoke out about it too. Jamel Charlo just said something about it. Now you're hearing a couple guys say something about it, but, you know, we need guys to talk about it who's in the game and got some skin in the game and at the top level talk about it more than more than guys who's already retired. I mean, it's dope because they definitely have wisdom. They know what's going on in the sport because they've been through there. But, you know, they need to talk to us, and we need the young guys or the guys that's at the top of the sport to talk about it more than anything.
So one thing I thought was cool in doing the research on this is that some of your earliest memories of being in a Jamaican barbershop, your pops from Jamaica, and watching Lennox Lewis fights on the cable box. Like, how does it feel for you now being the dude that people are watching fight in the barbershop?
That's a dope. I mean, that's a dope feeling. That's because at the time I wasn't boxing at all, so I wasn't thinking about me, you know, hopefully being there one day. So just genuinely just watching boxing with my dad and other people and just seeing, you know, just seeing Lennox Lewis. I remember seeing Lennox Lewis versus Mike Tyson when they had, like, all the cops lined up, you know, in the ring so Mike Tyson wouldn't attack Lennox Lewis, and just seeing how big of a fight that was and, you know, just the magnitude of it. And now I'm in a fight of that magnitude. It's just a great feeling. And, you know, feel like me watching that and learning from that and just seeing those type of things and just seeing how excited and genuinely happy just the guys in the barbershop was, and it was, you know, side betting and, you know, and laughing and, you know, arguing with each other, you know, and just knowing that it's going to be people just like that doing the same thing when me and Terrence Crawford fight. You know, it's a dope feeling.
Well, what made you want to get into boxing? Because I remember when I was a kid, I didn't even want to do karate or nothing like that because them dudes would get to hit me back. And that was never an appealing proposition for me. Like, what made you want to get into this?
My dad. I mean, I didn't want to box because I felt like I already knew how to fight. So I didn't want to box, but he seen me outside playing with, you know, basically in the gloves and slap boxing with my friends and getting a little bit of trouble. And basically it was summertime. I ain't have nothing to do. I had a lot of idle time on my hands. You know, they say idle time is the devil's playground. So my dad, he already know I get bored and hang out with my friends. I can get into whatever. So he took me to the gym, boxing gym. I don't know why he thought about the boxing gym out of all the things I could have been doing. But he thought about the boxing gym, and he took me there with a couple of my friends, and I stayed and ended up doing it. And you know, they left after a while. It was too hot, too much work for them, so they got out of it. They didn't have anybody push them. My dad pushed me in the gym and told me that, because I wanted to stop because my friend stopped, and he was like, "Nah, you're not gonna stop," and made me keep going. And you know, doing it 6-7 days out of the week becomes more natural to you. And it's, for me, it's like using the bathroom is natural. It's just a way of life for me now.
How much is your pops loving this now? Like seeing all this come together as it has?
Oh, yeah. He definitely loves it. My dad's like my shadow. You know, he's always with me. Always, you know, he might not talk a lot or, you know, just be in the front for him, but you know, he's always right there on the side of me. So, you know, it's a dope feeling just having my dad there and just, you know, knowing that he's going to be there for my whole career. And he's been there since the beginning, and he's the one got me into it. And we're going to just ride it out till the wheels fall off.
All right, man. So how's this fight going to go? Like, how do you see this going on the 29th?
I see it going, you know, he's definitely a great fighter. So he's definitely going to put up a great fight. He's going to come to fight. But I see me basically just breaking him down, beating him up, and, you know, hopefully getting a stoppage in the later round, or me just battering him, beating him up throughout the fight and winning the fight.
All right, man. That is Errol Spence. Check us out. July 29th, T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas on Showtime. Spence versus Crawford. My man, I appreciate you, man. Thanks so much.
No problem.
All right, and ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Adi Khan, Parker Owens, and Dan Stancic handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.